The weekly federal jobless numbers came out this morning. Last week's record of 3.3 million people filing for unemployment benefits was roughly doubled this week. If there's any doubt about why Congress passed such a massive stimulus bill last week, it should be dispelled now. Oregon Senator Ron Wyden visited with us yesterday by phone from Washington to talk about the road ahead. Senator Wyden, thanks for joining us. The price tag on the stimulus bill is jaw-dropping at $2.2 trillion, but the possible unemployment figure of 35% is also jaw-dropping. Is this round enough to forestall disaster, at least in the short term?
Well, obviously, I'm sitting at my desk in the Dirksen Senate office building right now to get the most precise answer to your question possible. I mean, the idea was this would make a real difference, particularly in terms of trying to put a pause out there in the American economy. I mean, workers are just hemorrhaging resources right now. They don't have that pay coming in, so they can't make rent, they can't buy groceries, they can't pay out-of-pocket medical. So I wrote the unemployment compensation provision that's going to get them traditional unemployment plus $600 more per week, each week for the next 4 months. And this would also apply to gig workers and part-timers and independent contractors and the like. Then on the employer side, I wrote the Employer Worker Retention Act to make sure that there were opportunities for employers to retain their workers. It's a tax credit for that. And Oregon is a small business state. So when I put those two provisions together in negotiations with Secretary Mnuchin, much of the bill went to the Senate Finance Committee, where I'm the ranking Democrat. I felt it would make a real difference so that in terms of workers, we'd replace wages. In terms of employers, it would help them to keep their doors open. It would, in effect, put a pause on some of this economic hemorrhaging so that as we began to recover, we weren't starting from scratch.
Let's focus on that unemployment part of it, because you saw an opportunity here, as I understand it, to do some remodeling of unemployment insurance that had been deferred for quite a long time.
That's right. I mean, the unemployment program was really invented in the 1930s, begun in Wisconsin. Not all that many changes since then. And it just seemed to me that looking at the modern economy, and certainly you see this in Southern Oregon, you see a lot of independent contractors, you see a lot of part-timers, you see a lot of gig workers, you know, see folks who drive a bit, this kind of thing. And I just didn't want them to be left out. So what we've done here is, I think, laid the foundation to not only help these people over the next 4 months, I think the rules that we worked out with the Trump administration for all of these folks who never really got a fair shake before can be the foundation for reforming unemployment insurance in the future.
So even outside of crisis times, will the changes to the unemployment insurance regime continue?
What I can tell your listeners is these changes in unemployment last for 4 months. They last for the life of the program. I do think that we're going to be able to show that we put sufficient time, particularly into getting these people covered, like the independent contractors and the gig workers and the self-employed. We put so much time into that, I think they'll be the foundation for broader changes when we get through the pandemic.
Senator, one of the charges from Republicans as the bill neared completion was that if you make unemployment insurance too good, people will not want to work. How did you counter that argument?
Well, I just said on the floor, I can't see anybody making a case, for example, that nurses who are putting in these Herculean efforts to try to help people are going to somehow quit their jobs, which is really what they were arguing. By the way, if you quit your job, you're not eligible for unemployment. So there are some, you know, real questions about their argument. But what we said is that this was rough justice.
Rough justice in what sense?
Well, it's a national average in terms of a replacement wage. Some people may get a bit more than they would be getting, and other people might get have a situation where they're getting less. You might take a state like New York, for example, where people would say that $600 per week is not, you know, a typical replacement wage. Other states, it might be more, but we had to get it out fast, and so I negotiated this with the Trump administration, and we were able to put it together.
Senator Ron Wyden is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We talked to him yesterday from Washington. The checks we're expecting, Senator, the stimulus checks, are those paper checks only? Is direct deposit possible?
We're working on that. We're hoping that it will be direct deposit. That's what's being considered right now.
Okay, because one of the issues that arises if they do come in check form is, one, exposure to other people, two, having to make an appointment at some financial institutions that are either on reduced hours or only taking appointment customers now.
Yeah, I very much want to get these direct deposits, and that's being worked on now, and I think we'll be able to have that up and going. I'm confident that it will be up and going.
The Wall Street Journal report about President Trump wanting to make sure his signature appeared on the checks. Have you heard that yourself?
Yeah, I mean, that really defies kind of what citizens are thinking about. The citizens are talking about who's going to get some help.
All right, let's move on, Senator, to talk about, we did talk about small business in passing, but can you give us a little more detail on the kinds of things?
And let me be clear, you know, apropos of this whole issue of people not wanting, you know, to work, I think the best way to characterize it would be, you know, if you voluntarily quit your job without good cause, that's what we're talking about here, okay?
Okay, understood. Appreciate that. Small businesses, then. Now, what kinds of things are in the stimulus package for them?
Pardon me?
I want to get a little more detail on the small business features of the package.
The small business features, I think the way I would characterize it is I negotiated a tax credit for the businesses who keep their workers on the payroll so that they can pay their bills and have health care and other benefits. The package includes a provision I introduced with several colleagues to make sure that every small business with a loan from the SBA, the Small Business Administration, will be relieved of their loan payments, including principal and interest and fees, for the next 6 months. 4,000 small businesses would qualify for that kind of debt relief. And then there are two other very important provisions, $10 billion for SBA emergency grants of up to $10,000 to provide immediate relief for small business operating costs, and another $350 billion for small business loans of up to $10 million, and this is particularly for rural areas.
Okay, beyond small business, Senator Wyden, there was a fair amount of grumbling as the bill came close to final passage about corporate handouts and the tracking of those. Did what got passed satisfy you?
Well, we didn't get everything that we wanted, but we certainly got more guardrails than the Trump people wanted. And in fact, today I and several of my colleagues put out a letter making it very clear that we are going to watchdog those provisions as it relates to big business.
Business aside, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of pressure on state government. And in Oregon, you know, generally the need rises as the income for meeting those needs drops because Oregon has to have a balanced budget. What is in the stimulus package for state and even local governments?
There is state fiscal, relief. We're getting something like $1 billion out across Oregon, and a number of communities are going to get assistance as well. But for states and municipalities, it's a very substantial sum.
Senator Ron Wyden, again,
more than a billion.
Mm-hmm. More than a billion. Okay. So the financial damage, even if made less deep by the bill, will certainly linger. I mean, we've got a situation where you've got state universities like Southern Oregon University going online only for the spring quarter. That takes people and money out of the local economy. The Oregon Shakespeare Festival will stay closed until September, further dinging the economy. You've got a business in your own family, so you know the story here. How long can a place like Strand Books or an Ashland restaurant hold out without another round of support?
I do believe that we are going to need a fourth economic package. I mean, you gave a number of examples, and I'm particularly concerned about a lot of our universities. I mean, I think a lot of these universities are going to be saying to themselves, it was hard trying to figure out how to make ends meet before the coronavirus. And I'm not talking about the big schools back east or Stanford or something like that. I'm talking about a lot of programs where Oregon kids go to school. They're already up to their eyeballs in debt, and I don't want them to lose out on the prospect of an education.
Well, we were also concerned, of course, about impacts on tourism from fire impacts through the summer. Smoke certainly had an impact on tourism in 2017, 2018, got skipped in 2019. You and Senator Merkley, I understand, announced recent action on air tankers. What's up?
Yeah, we're very pleased that we've been able to get the air tankers this week. The Forest Service announced that at our request, they're going to have 5 additional air tankers ready for the summer, bringing their total to 35 air tankers, including a number of contracts to the Oregon air tanker company, Ericsson. And the point of this really is we can't just say, all right, because we've taken this devastating hit with COVID and the pandemic, we're just going to say that's what we're going to do, and we're not going to address some of these other kinds of challenges. The COVID public health emergency is, of course, absolutely critical, but we want to make sure that we're also getting ready for what we have every reason to believe is going to be another tough fire season. So it's not as if these two are mutually exclusive. We're going to be zeroing in on the COVID epidemic hitting Oregon like a wrecking ball from a public health standpoint and from an economic standpoint, and we're going to make sure that we're pulling out all the stops to get ready to fight what we're concerned about will be an inferno. Now, a bit of good news for listeners is my Wildfire Disaster Funding Act officially takes effect this year. And what this does is it ends this horrible practice of borrowing from wildfire prevention money to pay for suppression. And what we need to do is start treating these really big fires for what they are, infernos, and no longer raiding the prevention money, because if you raid the prevention money, basically you're taking a serious problem and making it worse. And the legislation I wrote with Senator Mike Crapo, Republican of Idaho, goes into effect this year officially, and it ends this really flawed, common sense defying idea of borrowing from fire prevention. We need to always try to focus on prevention, going in there and cleaning out those overstocked stands and making sure that we're keeping communities safe and pulling together the resources in the most cost-effective way, which is to spend the first dollar on prevention and then make sure you have additional resources essentially from the disaster side of the budget for the big fire.
Senator, I see I'm down to my last question here. So as the COVID-19 crisis unfolds, and we have all eyes on the executive branch to help the states cope with medical emergencies that are ongoing, short of the kinds of things already done, sending money to people in governments, is Congress able to do much to prod the administration in a certain direction?
Well, I'll give you an example of what happened yesterday. With the very good work of the Senate Finance Democratic staff, we found some errors in the guidance that the Trump administration put out on Medicaid for home and community-based services. And we brought this to the attention of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And to their credit, they said, you know, those finance Democratic staffers are right. They got a valid point. And by the end of the day yesterday, what you had was Oregon getting about $80 million more for home and community-based services under Medicaid for vulnerable seniors and disabled folks. So what I can tell you is we're spending every day trying to make sure that the money gets to folks for whom it's intended. That's why I'm sitting at my desk in the Dirksen Senate Office Building right now, and we're available to folks. Molly McCarthy in Southern Oregon, working out of Jackson County, and we hope people will let us know what we can do to be of help.
Okay, thanks for letting us know where to go to get that help. Senator Ron Wyden, thank you for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Great, thanks for having me.
Senator Wyden was one of the people who signed on to a letter yesterday asking the Treasury Department not to undertake what it had planned, which was to require Social Security recipients to actually file a tax return before they could get their stimulus checks. Late in the day, the Treasury Department relented on that. So things will go without the need for people to file tax returns.